the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
This place has been kicked, it's been battered, it's been bruised, and I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't, but none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that, so excuse my language, all right? Here's what I do know, is that this team is going to take on the identity of this city, all right? And this city's been down, and it found a way to get up, all right? It's found a way to overcome adversity. All right. And so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right. And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right. That's going to be the mentality.
Dan Campbell, proponent for cannibalism.
Or making us a zombie horde.
Yeah, whichever one you're looking at, it's fine. Look, PJ Fleck has row the boat. We're going to bite a kneecap off. That was the announcement of newly hired Lions head coach Dan Campbell, former tight end in the league. Spent the last X amount of years in New Orleans with Sean Payton as his assistant head coach and tight ends coach. Before I forget, I'm Eric Dorsch, as if you didn't know that. If you're listening to this show, you've known it for a while. That was Russ Ivanek and Justin Marcus slowly sipping on a drink while listening to Dan Campbell talk about biting people.
Slowly sipping on a drink is an excellent way to describe how I'm going to feel this process out, because like everyone shows up with something, right? He set the table, right? Now show me what's on my plate for dinner. Like, I'm very skeptical.
A kneecap
about Dan
is
Campbell
on your
right
plate
now.
For dinner.
Maybe two.
A kneecap. Yeah, maybe two. I don't know. By the way, what does that person look like after Dan Campbell's done with him is what I wanted to know. Like, hear me out. It's Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump.
Oh, my God.
It's Lieutenant Dan. look, we want to get into it. We want to break it down and talk about it. I might be the one that's most optimistic about this hire. I might be the one that's looking forward to it most. Partly because I was telling Russ before the show while we were waiting for, Sergeant Salty to be ready. You know, he's always got to take his time and get ready. So we're usually waiting on him. That I see this guy as something that's going to be a little different. We're going to see more sideline outbursts. We're going to see this guy get into players' faces. He is going to actually be a every play coach, not a guy who is going to hand it off to coordinators and say, you do you. Which for a while I was arguing we kind of needed, but this is a guy that wants to know every play that was called, everything happens, wants to know who missed what assignment and why did that happen, and he wants to get in that guy's face and make sure they know this can't happen again. I said it to you guys in a text. He may be over the top in some areas, but this is a guy that's going to go in, he's going to look at every player, and the people that didn't show up, he's going to ask them why, figure out if they're capable of showing up, and if they aren't showing up, Russ, he's going to show them the door.
It certainly seems that way. Yeah, enthusiastic hard ass, I guess, is the first impression. Because yeah. Boy, did he come out swinging! Day one, came out swinging. I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but hey, what, 2-3 weeks ago, I called him as my dark horse guy. Let me say now what I should have said then. I don't like who I was then. I should have specified. I thought it was a very Lions thing to do, not who I would have wanted necessarily. So, I don't necessarily share Eric's optimism, but he does check the boxes I wanted. Extensive background check. Hey, he didn't, sexually assault a woman in a hotel, Patricia. Wasn't the Belichick tree guy. Wasn't one of those, is under an offensive head coach and is the offensive coordinator riding coattails. And he's under 60. So he checks a lot of boxes, and he can be the CEO type. It's interesting, a lot of this, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this a whole lot more. Him not being a coordinator doesn't bother me. What could bother me is who he ends up having as his coordinators. I did that deep dive before. Only seven, last 20 years, only seven head coaches have been first-time head coaches that have won the Super Bowl in the last 20 years. Five of them had a former head coach as one of their coordinators. We already know the D coordinator is not going to be. and the two guys they've interviewed to the offensive coordinator, the position coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Does the lack of experience scare anybody else?
A little. I feel like we're slowly walking into... See, the difference is, with Patricia, he was never a head coach, but we also don't know how much freedom he was ever given in New England. How much was really Matt Patricia, and how much was actually just Bill Belichick making everybody look good. Bevel was a coordinator, obviously. I don't even remember the guy's name, but his defensive coordinator, Patricia, is from Boston College.
Pasqualoni
had no business being here. So, yes, I am a little, you know, I would like to see someone that actually has coordinator on their resume. I think we all would. Before we get too far out of that, Russ, you made comments of he checked off a lot of boxes and you let off with, you know, never attacked a woman in a hotel and all that. I want to ask, though, he was asked about, and again, this was 20 years ago, he was asked about the comments of making a homophobic slur, and he you know, like most people do when they realize a bad statement and what they did, he was very apologetic and all that. We're seeing Justin Thomas go through that now, losing sponsors and all that. Something that long ago, Russ, does it stick with you? Is it something you automatically, you know, put a negative in the column, or he's a grown man, he acknowledges what he did, and he's, you know, he's trying to move on from it, and he's straightforward apologetic?
So it was, before he walks up and answers any questions, it was a negative in my column. Uh-huh. That's a red flag. Why did you say that? And you go, all right, yes, he was 22 years old, he was in college, it was a long time ago. Those are all questions, not excuses, right? And that's, he started to address this. I'm not going to give him a full pass, but it lets us get to the next step. With, he said he was wrong. He wishes he never said it. His fiance told him that night, you're wrong. Yeah. And he realized, yeah, I messed up. If he then goes and lives that from this point forward, we're cool. It's a huge step up from Patricia, who just flat out denied all of the allegations against him.
Well, that's the Patriot way. Deny, 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 yep. until proven guilty, and then deny a little bit longer just in case. And remind Roger Goodell that if you punish us, you're really just punishing the league because we win all the time. So it is what it is.
Yep.
Jay, as we were texting today, where, you know, I was watching the press conference and going through everything, I don't think I'm reaching and saying that you of the three of us seemed the most, like, not a naysayer, because that's not right to say, but the most skeptical of where we fell with this guy. So I guess if you've seen the press conference at all, if not the clips, I'm assuming you've seen a couple of them. Nothing really swayed you one way or the other to feeling comfortable about Dan Campbell as the new head coach?
I mean, when we talk about checking boxes, you know, Marvin Lewis was a guy that checked a box because he had a track record behind it. It was the stability. So now we got Dan Campbell and he's preaching accountability, which I think is great because this team needs to be accountable. You know, we're talking about him being accountable for his past, and if he's going to hold his players to a high standard, that's all great, right? We're talking about human stuff. I need to know what's going to happen on the field. Steve Yzerman comes in and he says, look, patience, it's going to take some time. Look at all the draft capital we have right now going into this next draft. We've got like a million picks in the first three rounds, right? That's the proof. We won't see it now, but I need the proof to feel comfortable. Marvin Lewis gave me that security. And the way that I'm starting to think about Dan Campbell, he's the John Tortorella of the NFL. He's going to walk in this door and act all crass, and I'm going to do this. We're going to bite kneecaps. We're going to do this. I was a player. I know what it's like. Like, he's letting it hang. It's a character almost, which is fine if you win. Or if you hired the right people to do the right things and actually have an average defense. So there's a lot more hurdles he's got to clear. He seems like a nice guy so far. People aren't going to be walking. We might be signing Ndamukong Suh so he can do all these nasty knee bites. But, like, I want to see it through is what I'm getting at. I'm not overly excited just quite yet. He wasn't the guy I wanted anyway, so that's probably why.
I'm gonna throw something out there that might get you back into the fold. Now, as of right now, a lot of sites have reported he's quoted as staying in Arizona State with a new title. What if they go after Marvin Lewis for the offensive coordinator? Bring in a guy with actual experience.
But isn't Marvin
I wouldn't
Lewis
hate that because the last...
Isn't his history as a head coach and a D coordinator?
It very well could be. I like I said, I'm throwing something that might entice Justin.
I don't know. I was at a red light, and the latest thing I saw is that we interviewed someone from the Steelers, was an ex-player. Yeah, like, I don't know, man. I don't want this, like, misfit box of toys. I need someone who knows something. Like, I need something tangible is what I'm getting at.
Look, at the end of the day, anything's better than hiring Dan Orlovsky as our offensive coordinator because he also played on that 0-16 team.
There's still time.
Yeah, unfortunately there is.
Don't leave him on TV. I don't want him anywhere on the field.
The thing for me, and I look at it strictly from this, that press conference is one thing and one thing only. It is his job interview with the fans. The Ford family, Rod Wood, Spielman and all them who are in that room and technically making the decision, that's great. That's about 30% of what matters. Because at the end of the day, the fans are the people that have to watch these games and support this team. So really, you're interviewing for the fans as well. If you have a bad press conference, which I felt at times, he struggled to answer questions. But at the end of the day, that's fine. If you can articulate what you want to get done on the field to those players, I don't care if you have a speech impediment when you talk to us. You don't need to be clear with us. It's what you can do on the field. It really is. And for me, as a guy who has seen multiple head coaches come and go, has followed it all the way, this was a guy that did exactly what he had to do. He came in and he gave a great first interview. He answered every question. He was articulate when he needed to be. And the thing is, you could tell a couple times he didn't know how to answer the question because he just wanted to go straight into X's and O's mode and knew I'm going to lose a lot of people if I do that. Example being, he tried to break down one particular situation of how'd he do things, and he started using terminology that I think if you're in that Lions front office, you're going, stop doing that, they're going to know what our signals are. Stop doing that, they're going to know what our signals are. But he really is. He is an X's and O's. I played this game. I know what I need to do. And for me, that's what you have to do. You have to get enough people on the side that it can justify, by the way, the fact that they have five, Holmes has 5 years and Campbell has a 6-year contract, says whether they wanted to be straightforward with it about it or not, they are tearing this thing down to the ground, but they're going to do it in a very smart way. I look at it more, and I think both, Jay, I'll let you go here, but I think you both agree with me. As much as I don't want to call it a rebuild, I'm going to call it we're renovating half the house and we're putting an addition on the other half because we just don't like what we already have there. So I like it for that regard.
Well, it just popped in my brain. When you do that, you uncap your taxable value on your house because you're redoing more than 50% of it. So it is a rebuild according to the state. So it's a rebuild
Thanks,
in my
Dad.
Mind.
Thanks,
one last parting shot on this.
Why are you the way that you
one
are?
One thing I don't... Hey, my brain works, man. I don't know. One thing I'm worried about, though, is that if he comes in the door all hot like this and say we continue to be a losing team because the past, like, 50 years tell us that, I'm afraid he's just going to become that personality fall guy because that Matt Stafford will never just be that guy in an interview. If he's the guy like, yeah, we just suck today, like, he's going to say it blunt so the fans are like, oh, yeah, we suck, and the coach knows we suck, so it's okay. We can keep watching and we can keep sucking. If the coach said it was fine. I'm afraid that he becomes, like, the we're terrible, we're renovating the house, and I'm just going to take all the fall at every press conference and avoid coach speak. And it's okay because then we'll still spend our money and watch every weekend. Hmm.
Jay, just so you know, because I'm tired of seeing your hand go up, in the corner of Skype there is a raise hand button. I'd like you to start pushing that from now on, as I have no longer... No, I agree with you, but he did something today, and I know when we had this conversation... Russ, is everything okay? Is your house
there's
possessed?
There's some loud noises. Okay.
for those that don't know, Russ just got a new kitten, and they're still getting... I have a feeling it's already on the ceiling fan spinning around, and Russ doesn't know about it yet. Real quick, I said this as we talked over the last couple of weeks about hires, what we wanted to hear, what we wanted to see, and I want to know if the comparison caught with either of you. I saw something I said I wanted out of our new head coach that we got out of Steve Eisenman. He immediately said, I'm not going to give you a projected wins and losses. I'm not going to give you this, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. We are going to take our time and we are going to assess and go to work and see what we can do here. This is not an overnight change, Russ. And I want you to realize, we realize that, and we're ready to go, but this is not going to be the Lions. He even called the Packers the mold for the NFC North, because they kind of are right now. He even said, that's where we need to be looking at. You need to look at a division rival to figure out, and I just feel like when it came to answering the questions, he answered the questions the best way possible by giving everybody the hope they wanted, but also, like Eiserman, pointing out the realistic fact that we are not a ready-to-go team at this particular moment, but we're trying.
Right. Yeah, and it's that underlying thought of process over results. Record's going to be whatever it's going to be, but we're going to do the right thing each day, and we're going to get a little bit better with each and every move we make. And yes, I see that common thread between them, and I hope in 3 to 4 years we're happy in the same way for both teams. One thing I can be damn sure of after listening to that press conference, crazy sumbitch is definitely rushing more than four.
Oh God!
I promise you.
he talked about yep. He talked about if we have a corner that's good blitzing, we're gonna blitz him too. This guy, regardless of what you want, this guy is going to make sure at the end of the year, no matter the record, the Lions are the toughest team in football. He doesn't care about much else right now. He is going to find the guys that are going to play his brand of football. And I like that. I like that we're going to see a coach that genuinely looks like he gives a crap instead of seeing us, you know, get sacked for a 15-yard loss and the guy looks like he's just waiting for the commercial break to end. He just does not seem like he gives a shit. So this, obviously we can't put a grade on all this right now, but what we can do, like we do every year, we are going to give our grades for the former Lions team. And oh boy, I think we might as well just pull out one of my high school report cards and read off of that, because this is not going to go well. Before we get into that, I would like to say, if either of you saw it, again, I'm going back, but this is such a big thing for Detroit right now that we can't not talk about it. Dan Campbell was actually asked to comment on his perception of the team last year and the coaching staff and all that. And I thought very, you know, politically correct, he said, I'm more Switzerland than nothing else. He said, I'm not commenting on that. That's not for me. I wasn't here to sit there and pick apart something that I wasn't in the locker room for is not fair. And I kind of like that, because you could have gone two ways. You can do what he did, be very down the middle and not really give anything, Jay. Or you could have just said, yeah, they were idiots. What were they thinking? And he chose the better of the two, in my opinion.
I mean, the alternative of saying, hey, all those guys suck ass, is also saying, and the people who hired them suck ass.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to do that, because that's also his boss.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I liked that the thing that he did very well in all this, if nothing else, he left everything completely still. He answered a question without ever really giving you the definitive answer. Are we rebuilding? Maybe. Was last year's team terrible? Maybe. Is Matt Stafford going to be in a Honolulu blue and silver jersey next year? Maybe. You
that's
have no
yes.
I think it's a yes too. I think the only thing that stops them is Indy just handing over like the keys to the vault, and which is very possible. Indy is a ready to win team right now. They just need a quarterback with Rivers retiring. So that's the only one. I don't foresee Stafford being gone. The only thing I see, and if we could make it happen, dear Lord, please make it happen, is there's one guy down in Houston who does not want to be the quarterback for the Texans anymore. I read the other day, he's been evaluated as probably being worth at least two, maybe three first overall picks. Stafford, I think, isn't going to garner that much, but he could garner pretty close. So you might be able to straight swap and only lose a little. And at the end of the day, I know Russ would be very happy to see Deshaun Watson in a Lions jersey next year.
And how much does it suck that Bill O'Brien isn't still there to fleece him in that trade?
Absolutely. Well, that team's gonna run into trouble soon. They have not hired anyone, and there are vacancies closing left and right. You could be signing a guy just because you have no one else. So
I hear Matt Patricia is available.
I hear Matt. Go for Braden Braden Coombs. He goes for it on every single play. All right, let's get over to it. We got the report card. Go through this, and like usual, we'll do all the positions. Head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and then offense and defense. Lots of fun with it. So we'll just kind of round robin it here. Jay, I'll let you go first with that all important position, number 9, quarterback.
Oh, yeah, I picked that one off the top.
Well, it's the first position.
I know, but
you want to go punter, Jay. Just give us the punter if that's really what you're looking for.
You better not.
Oh, there's only one grade for the punter this year. But anyway, go ahead, Jay, quarterback.
You're not going to like any special teams then. Quarterback to B-.
Okay.
Leave Adam Fox alone for now. We'll get to him.
It's Jake Fox.
Quarterback, same difference.
Jack Fox.
Quarterback.
Jack
Fox. Oh, my God.
You got to be kidding.
Hold on.
Why are you the way that you are?
Okay, now that's for me. I don't care.
Quarterback, B-. Nothing on this team gets an A. Nothing gets higher than a B-. I'm starting to think Stafford's complacent. He doesn't get mad. He doesn't get angry. He plays pointless games. He's the best worst thing to ever happen to this team. So B-, and the rest of the quarterbacks don't fucking matter.
By the way, so
I'm gonna
poke a big hole into your statement right there by saying nothing on this team gets higher than a B-, because I'm looking at mine right now, and I agree with you. The grades are pretty consistent. There are at least two on this that get higher than a B-, and if you don't give one of them a B-, you're just a hypocrite for the last 16 weeks. So when we get to it, I'll point it out.
Bring it,
no,
baby.
When we get to
bring
our point, listen, 4,084 yards, 26 touchdowns against 10 interceptions. Stafford was sacked 38 times this year, which is seventh highest in the league. So he still was very productive for being rushed quite a bit. I agree with the B. I give it a B+. He had no Kenny Golladay this year. He had the most confused run game to ever exist. He had an offensive line that, while parts of it figured out what they needed to do, he also had one thing going against him. The other team knew the defense wasn't going to stop him, so all they really had to do was just manage Stafford, and they were going to win the game, which a lot of teams did. I say B+. B+, Russ.
I graded it on a curve, which is probably why I'm the most generous out of all of us. Mm-hmm. I gave Stafford an A-.
Okay.
And that, again, that's grading on a curve because, oh, he's missing Golladay, top receiver.
Yeah.
And outside of Hockenson and Jones, there's completely bereft of real talent there. Amendola did okay. He scored no touchdowns, zero touchdowns.
Yep. Ding, ding, ding.
Stafford broke 4,000 yards and 25 touchdowns for the first time since 2017 and was injured for part of it. So I'm going to give him more credit than I'm going to give everyone else. This is the highest grade that I give until we get to that special teams unit that Justin apparently doesn't give two shits about. But I'm happy with Stafford. He's not the reason we're in this, and often he was the most watchable part.
Okay. Right back to you, Russ, for the running back position.
Give me a D for Detroit. Oh, man. It's just so bad. 93 rushing first downs on the season, which is 24th in the league. 4.1 yards per attempt, 26th in the league. I can keep going. It's all bottom five or bottom 10 for rushing stats. Adrian Peterson was brought in to be a focal player at some point. That's a logical and skill error that I'm just not going to be able to get behind. It's a D for me.
Okay. I'm going to go very close to you. I'm going to go C-, for this reason only. DeAndre Swift was one dropped pass away from being immortalized as the second greatest running back the Lions have ever had if he doesn't drop that ball on the very first play. Partly for that other reason. This team didn't know which way they wanted to go. They relied very heavily on Adrian Peterson, and we saw flashes, very, very minimal flashes. But on the other side, when they committed to Swift, they did not commit to him in the same fairness they committed to AP. He never really got the chance to say, all right, for the rest of this season, you're the number one back. Right or wrong, I don't care if you average a yard a carry over the next, 5 weeks. You're our guy. We need to know. They really just kept leaning on AP. So I say C- for that because it wasn't good, but we also don't know that you didn't fully understand the material. There's still too much of a question mark to just fail you entirely, Dre.
Well, we're all kind of drinking from the same cup here because if I could put my grade into gift form, this would be Ari Gold from Entourage saying, get the fuck out, very dramatically, because my running backs are getting a triple F as their score. Triple F. It's a crazy rubric or a grading scale that I have over here. This is the last time I'll say this. Week 3 after that game, I said the downfall of this team offensively will be the ground game.
Yeah.
And it was abysmal. We wasted Kerryon Johnson. We got Adrian Peterson. Done. Doesn't matter. Swift didn't commit to him like Eric said. It was a joke. So triple F, get the fuck out of here.
I didn't even account for Kerryon in the grade. I just completely forgot about him. Three carries immediately gets you a you didn't show up for enough classes to get a grade. all right, Jay.
No participation point.
Yeah, Jay, right back to you. We're going with the wide receivers. This one's tough because this one, there's a lot of question marks that get left in the air on this one.
So this group, I'm going with a solid C. Jesse James, what the fuck are you? Russ touched on it. Touchdownless Amendola, welcome to Detroit. Deep ball, Marvin Hall, great. That was a one-trick pony show when we would chuck it down the field in fourth quarter and we're down by 20 points. No Kenny, only had Marvin. TJ Hockenson, marginal increase over last year, and we talked about the evolution of tight ends. It's a C. It's nothing bad. It's nothing good. It's just there.
Okay. I gave this one a grade on, again, there was a lot of question mark there. This was probably the most generous I went with a group for what they actually did. I gave the wide receivers a B. I gave them a B for the fact that Kenny Golladay had 20 catches for 338 yards and two touchdowns, which means, Russ, please don't pay that close attention to this math, Stafford passed for about 3,700 yards and about 24 touchdowns with Jones. Amendola clearly didn't catch any of them. Quintez Cephas, Marvin Hall, all these other guys. And he passed for 37 yards with these guys. So that means that these guys, when they got on the field, whether you were Marvin, who probably had a good majority of that, TJ Hockenson helped out, I get. But TJ Hockenson fits into another category of position. They still had to. They still. What's that?
I said thank you.
Yeah. They still had to get it done in some way for him to put up those numbers. So the fact that every other one of these guys outside of Marvin is a second or third at best option on most teams, and some of them were asked to step up and replace Kenny Golladay, very tough to do. I give them a B for that. Now, not to mention if, you know, Kenny Golladay played, what, three games maybe at best and had 338 yards. Imagine what this guy could have done if he had stayed healthy for a year. So it left a giant hole in that offense, and they had a very hard time. It was like the Titanic. They couldn't really patch it, but they tried.
Yeah. No, I had a similar logic in that there was a lot of guys asked to do more than they were initially assuming they would. Right, that wasn't their role coming into the year, and they were thrust into a new position.
Yep.
Which is what brought us up to a C-plus for me. Marvin Jones, almost 1,000 yards, sneaks into 19th in receiving yards among wide receivers. So, hey, top 20, not bad. 9 touchdowns, pretty good. Amendola was the only other receiver over 500 yards for the season. And that's not good, to only have 2 wide receivers over 500 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Golladay would have played the whole season, that number would have changed. Maybe it brings up 2 of them because it frees up coverage. But I can't give them anything more than a C-plus personally because it was Jones and a whole lot of nothing else.
Well, and I think if Golladay plays, that Amendola no touchdown gets changed. Because there's just too much space for Amendola not to at least sneak in on at least a couple touchdowns.
You would think.
But also, you got to, in this position we're about to get to and about to touch on, you got to think, Hawk took a lot of those targets away from Amendola because Hockenson took that next step and became that real end zone kind of target for him. So, Russ, I know you said thank you. I'm right there with you. I needed this to be separate for the grade reason. Your tight end grade?
A B plus. Second highest grade I'm giving to the offense, and it's entirely because of Hockenson. And it would have been an A if it was, you know, contribution from anybody but Hockenson as well. Because it was him, and again, what's a Jesse James? but 723 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3rd in yards for tight end, 8th in touchdowns for tight end. Hockenson's here, and he's a top 5 to 10 tight end right now with the upside for more going into his third year. So that's a B+, and that's an entire position group being carried by one guy.
I'm not going to waste a lot of time. B+, I agree wholeheartedly with you. It's Hockenson. The guy became, even if it was for a year, and now we have to grade it on that because we only have 2 years to go off of, he became an elite-level receiving tight end, at least for this year. He stepped up his game. He went into this past offseason realizing, I'm a top-10 pick. I can't perform like that and expect to be around here much longer. Because this team and this city, as I said, this city is just as much in the front office as the people actually work in that front office. We have had too many mistakes at tight end that anyone else gets a short leash. Hockenson went out there and he stepped up and he played great football. I hope he can at least keep this level, if not, God forbid, improve, which I can't imagine improving that much more. But he was mentioned in a name with Ertz, with Kelsey, with Kittle. And to be mentioned with those guys means you are an elite player and they actually have to pay attention to where you are at all times. Something we haven't had from the tight end position ever since I can remember. So I say B+ as well, Jay.
I had him at a B, and he moved down to a B-minus only for the sole fact that Stafford can't just hit him in stride, and he has to dive for every damn ball. And I'm sick of watching him be down at the point of catching the ball. So it's Stafford's fault. He dragged him down. He's a B-minus. But it is a position group that's ran by one individual. So,
all right. Well, here was my point of where you have to be hypocritical. You can't – this guy was your guy for most of the season. Yeah. We focused – segments around this guy for you because of how much you liked him. If anyone is going to take a winning grade here and have to be graded higher than Matt Stafford, it has to be the guy that caught the ball from Matt Stafford and made the plays. If anything, that's a knock on Stafford's grade, not a knock on the tight end who still came up with the catch even though the ball wasn't thrown that great. I look like I'm doing that follow the bouncing ball as I'm going back and forth over, by the way.
In Justin's defense, gave the tight end group the same grade he gave Stafford, which is the highest grade he's given so far.
Okay. All right, so Jay, moving from that tight end position to the guys that just do the blocking, they don't catch the ball, offensive line.
Well, Stafford didn't die. So I think we've got that going for us. I mean, he took a lot of sacks. I mean, that stat you gave earlier, was it he was fourth or ninth?
Seventh most, 38. Seven. Which, by the way, very interesting to find out, Russell Wilson was the first – was number one with 52 sacks this year. So Russell Wilson ate the dirt a lot this year.
He's unlimited. Always sucked.
Oh, yeah, it's been terrible.
So, I mean, Stafford didn't die. I don't know. There's been a lot of moving pieces and people in different positions. I gave it a C. Again, it was kind of just like a middle-of-the-room type, average room temperature type shit. So it's just a C. Stafford's still breathing.
Yeah. C-plus for that exact – I gave him a C-plus for that exact reason. Stafford actually didn't finish this year on injured reserve. Hurt a little bit, banged up from time to time, but actually didn't finish the year with a fractured spinal cord or, you know, broken shoulder or anything like that. He didn't have to go in and throw the ball left-handed late in the game to win a game or anything like that. Look, yeah, seventh means that there were six worse than us, but it's also one of those things where it shows a little bit – Little steps here. I like this offensive line as they're developing it. They're still a couple pieces away. I think bringing in this kind of coach he's been on the line. He's a tight end. He knows about blocking. He's going to come in and show these guys some tricks to do this is a great thing. So I give him C+. There's room for improvement, but at the same time, it's like I said earlier, it shows that you at least have an idea of what we're trying to teach you here and move on from it.
How broken are we as a fan base that our evaluation period for a five-man unit is, hey, did they get the quarterback dead? Is he dead? Did they do a murder?
I
love it.
That's our entire evaluation criteria. And you know what? You're not wrong. I'm about in the same rate. 6.7% sack rate, which is 22nd in the league, so bottom 10, but only 7 holding penalties. So that's a solid C at that point. I give him a slight bump because Ragnow was an all-pro guy. One-fifth of the unit. Woo! You nailed that one. So a C-plus final from me. And then I have the grades across the board for each of us for the offense. Do we want to wait?
Well, we can do that, but I would like to point out this is the fifth most Stafford has been sacked in his career this year. Fifth most. Obviously, the highest was 47 in 2017. He was sacked 40 times the following year. 44 times in 2015 and 45 times in 2014. He's been in the league since 2009. He has never been under 20 sacks other than 2 years. And one of those years, I think he played 3 games. So just to give you perspective, the fact that Stafford came out alive is a contributing factor to this.
Yeah, it would be so nice to have an offensive line that didn't get the most important person on the field killed.
Fair enough. Russ, if you want to give us that, I put down grades for offensive and defense overall, but I'd be interested to see how close I got with the offense.
So calculated average, Eric, you gave him a 2.7, which is a B-minus, almost on the nose. Justin at 1.88, we'll round up to a 1.9. It's still just shy of a C. We'll give him a C-minus. And then I had a 2.52, but just shy of a B-minus. So they end up with a D-plus for me. D-plus, B-minus, C-minus.
I wrote
Look at that.
I wrote B-minus on my piece of paper hours ago. So Not that
okay,
bad.
Draft
like
day.
Math works.
Didn't even do math. Just guessed. Oh, dude, you could do a lot worse than being called Kevin Costner, my friend. Believe me. all right, Russ, turning around real quick. Offensive side of the line. Now we're going over to the defensive side of the line. Look, if any of you graduate or pass this defense, I'll be astonished.
I'll start with the D line.
Okay.
16.9% pressure rate, worst in the league.
Yep.
519 points allowed. I'm going to make this point every single time. 519 points allowed, the worst total in Detroit Lions history. You get an F, you go home, and you feel shame. F.
I wasn't that far off with you. I gave him a D for the fact that I don't think they ever actually found a single in the Patricia regime, if you even want to call it that, that they ever found a single defensive line player outside of Okora that was really ready to play football and take on the load we expected them to. They didn't know how to use him, even if they did have him. Patricia got in over his head, and instead of kind of saying, I'm a little lost here, I need to bring people in next year to help me with that, he just kept trying to run against it and fight it and could not make the alteration, and it cost him a job. It really did. I mean, listen, I don't think Patricia really had a fighting chance at all in 2020, but they gave him his fair shake. So I give him a D just for that fact that with what they had, they didn't have a chance. It was like putting a freshman football team against up against a varsity team. It just wasn't going to happen.
So I look at every position group for defense, and they all have the same letter grade. This is going to be super easy for me. D-line, F. F, 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 F. Patricia should have spent more time looking at developing players than looking at how he can customize his ATV for preseason, because he clearly missed the mark from the jump. It's enough.
Fair enough. Over to the linebackers, Jay. I mean, you said it's pretty easy, so I guess just give us the reason they failed.
Because they still were a part of the defense that allowed all those points. F.
Fair enough.
It's going to be quick on this side of the ball.
No, this is going to be very fast. I'm right there with Jay for the linebackers, F, for two reasons. Jelani Tavai took a monumental step back from his first year, in my opinion. Monumental. And two, it's been, I think he got drafted in like 2011, 20. I don't remember what year we drafted Jared Davis. But I would like to point out, in the X amount of years he's been here, he still hasn't learned how to cover someone. That's all we need you to do. What you don't understand, Jared, if you could cover someone, you'd actually probably make it to here. This is this little thing. Since you're not in the playoffs, they send the best players to it every year after the season. It's called the Pro Bowl. Ask Hawk about it. He just got into it, and he's only been in the league for 2 years. Learn how to cover, and you'd actually be a good linebacker. But guess what? You can't cover a tackling dummy. So we have a real, real problem. Linebacking core is just decimated. That would be one for me that, honestly, I think if you're Dan Campbell, you have to look at it and say, you guys better, like, earn your jobs, or we will trade you, get rid of you, do whatever we have to do, or we'll bring in someone who actually wants this job. F for me, Russ.
So far, sixth grade given out. One not F. Let's make it one more F. Linebackers, F. Opponents scored on 47.9% of their drives. That's the third worst mark in the league. There was 128 missed tackles. Fifth worst in the league. An F. There's nothing to keep. It's all bad. F.
Yeah. No, I agree. Moving on to the secondary. Big caveat here, our third overall pick, obviously Jeff Okora. Hard to grade on that, but for you, secondary defensive back, Russ.
Yeah, Okuda gets a little bit of a pass, but if I'm doing the whole unit, I'm looking at the numbers. The highest yards per attempt passing allowed.
Mm-hmm.
6.3 yards per play allowed on defense, tied for the worst. 7.1% turnover rate, second worst.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all bottom three numbers. So, no, you also get an F. Everyone gets an F.
All right, this is where, and I fully expect to get, you know, get, for people, for both of you and listeners to give me shit for this one. I was overly generous on this one. I gave them a C-, and I gave them a C- for two things. One, those first couple weeks, you had your two starting corners down and out for quite a while. So you were kind of backpedaling from there, which is what you're supposed to do anyway. But two, you had no front seven to help you at all.
Sure.
So you legitimately, you could have taken like four Darrell Revises, and I still think the numbers are not good because you had to keep everybody totally locked down for a longer period of time than anyone should ever be asked to. Now, the numbers are still awful, but to me, grading these as individuals, I have to add the fact in there that they had no help. No help whatsoever. It's the same as why I was a little more generous to the wide receivers. Your best player didn't play, and you had not a lot of help from the other supporting cast of running game. So, for me, that's the only reason the corners get a C- is because grading just strictly what they had to do, they had an impossible task that I think you could put together your top defensive back of all, or defensive backs of all time, they would still struggle in this defense having to do what they had to do, Jay.
Yeah, it's F's around. I mean, yeah. Between the corners and the safeties, just like, tell me this team would not be substantially better in the secondary with Diggs and Slay being back there and not having the third overall pick. Tell me what that looks like on a letter grade, because your third overall draft pick does not need to be classified as, it's too soon to tell. They're the third overall fucking pick in the draft. They're supposed to be a player that is a impact guy that does stuff, not this this process of eventually we'll get to that. Mm-mm, that's early demands. It's early results from
that's,
that. So
that, see,
it's
that's
on the secondary.
That's tough for me, especially in a position like that where that's a like running back, wide receiver, quarterback. You can tell year one what you're getting out of these guys because of that. A corner, you have to go from being, if you're drafted third overall, you have to go from being the best at your position in college, meaning no one was better than you, and on the other side of the ball, you handled whoever stepped in front of you, to now you have to go up against all these guys who were the best at one point in their in college, and then now some of them elevated to being the best in the world. And to ask a guy to do that on such a short turnaround, to me, corner, quarterback too in a lot of ways, but corner for me is one that I will automatically, no matter where you draft him, whether it's one or 199, I will give you a year. You get a year to learn this game before any judgment can be put down on you. Because last time I checked, if I was, you know, the best corner in the league going into the NFL, I'd still shit my pants when Julio Jones lined up against me and I went, oh, I have to stop you. Okay. But not going to happen.
That's fair. I'm just saying from being third overall, though, I understand the position.
Yeah, it's fine.
Then don't draft that player at three. Draft a more impact player who's going to come in and do some shit.
Yeah, but regardless, if that's the talent, and I know we're getting away from this here, but this is a fair debate. If that's the position you felt, and again, Quinn and Patricia, we don't really know what was going on in that draft room, but they felt that was the position. They felt there was no one better for them than him. So they addressed that position. So for right now, we have to assume with that third pick, they thought that Okuda was the right choice, and they took him. But it's not Okuda's fault that Okuda, who probably wasn't slated to even see the field very often early on, had to spend his first couple weeks going against Julio Jones, Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins. He had to cover three guys that 99% of the league can't cover, and some of those guys have been doing it for 5+ years. So he really had baptism by fire, and to say he even remotely stopped one of them or slowed one of them down is enough for me that like Hawkinson, it buys you a little bit of time. You have bought yourself an off season, and you've bought yourself a couple weeks in, and then we can start saying, all right, now you're a year in, you've had an off season, you've had a training camp, you've had practice. There shouldn't be any more shocks. There shouldn't be any more surprise to this.
But I want a golden goose now.
Yeah. I want it now.
This is Willy Wonka, man.
All right, I respect everything
you're saying.
All right, Veruca, calm down.
Thank you. Yep.
All right, so that was our defense. Russ, do we have some...
Yeah, so I'll spare you the decimals and just give you the letters because, frankly, this is a car going downhill, and that car was brakeless.
Ah.
It's an F from me, it's a D from Eric, it's an F from Justin.
I wrote down D. this was a bad side of the football. It was really tough. Moving on, we have special teams. I didn't really break down our punt and kick return specialists. If either of you did, Mazel tov. But I'm gonna say leading it off, guy that's been on the team for a couple years now. He's usually pretty reliable heading off here this year. Matt Prater, Russ, for you, Matt Prater got what grade?
I gave Matt Prater a C-.
Okay.
Prater's still Prater, right? He's still clutch from deep. Went 6-for-10 from 50-plus this year, which is still good. However, his 75% field goal percentage not only was bottom five in the league out of starters, it was his worst field goal percentage since 2008. So slightly below average year from Prater. Probably more than that, but he makes up for some of it in some of his clutch kicks that he can still do.
Yeah, and that's why I gave him a B. I gave him a B for that. Off year, but the thing was, he made the big long kicks when we put him in a bad position. He made those kicks. He definitely had an off year, like you said, 75%. That's not what you want out of a guy who's supposed to be one of the best kickers in the league. But at the end of the day, when you're having to go out there and kick five field goals a game, or attempt five field goals a game just to keep us in a game, I'm going to give it to you that, you know, every once in a while you're going to miss. I mean, even Steph Curry misses a free throw once every 3 years. So I'm going to say I gave him a B for that. He had an off year, but he still was a great player for us. And like you said, booted 6-for-10 from deep. I can't throw a ball that far, and this guy's doing it with a leg. So, Jay?
Unpopular opinion. I don't care about kickers. I do. Probably great people. Pat McAfee, electric.
For the Matt brand, Prater, man. For the brand.
Justin Tucker. What? Like, if you're kicking a ball, just, I don't care. Like, I don't, how hard is it to kick a fucking football? Like, for real, that's a real question. I understand they get paid lots of money. I understand the athleticism. I understand that it requires a certain skill. But in the grand scheme of football, I do not care about punters or kickers or the like. So I'm giving them a D.
Blabbering with unfactual information, which is confusing the general public.
Hey, Jay, what's the name of the game we're talking about?
Oh, fuck you.
Well played, sir. Well played. So, what? Jay, I was blind with hatred. What grade did you give him?
A D.
A D. Okay, well, you're stupid. flipping over to the other guy who kicks the ball with his foot, Jacob Dylan, whatever the hell you said his name was, Fox.
Jack. Please, Jack.
Yeah, Jack Fox. We don't want to. Like, we were hoping to one day speak to this man. Jack Fox had a hell of a debut for us. You're great. You don't care about kickers, so I got to assume it's a D or a C or an F.
Jack Fox is a C. Cool, bro. You're doing what you get paid to do. Kick the ball, get it where it's got to go. It's great.
All right. Well, I'm going to make up for it.
It's a turnover of downs. I do not care.
Jack, in case you tune into this, by the way, Jay, I think you know your little clip. It's going to be Russ telling you what game we're talking about. I'm going to make up for it, Jack, in case you tuned in right here. Jack gets an A+. The guy was the best player on the team this year. Saved us in so many opportunities. Had, like, literally could have gone out there and been a mediocre punter and no one would have thought less of him. But instead, he became a Pro Bowl punter in his first year. A+.
How many playoff games is that getting us to?
Who gives a shit? We're not breaking down the playoff games, man.
Hey, next time I see you wearing shoes, I'm going to tell you they're ugly-ass shoes because you haven't won a marathon in them. So what's the point of them?
That's fair.
That's very... Oh. All right. In the interest of disregarding that comment, it's an A for Jack Fox, only because I didn't think to give him an A+. PFF, first team All-Pro. AP, second team All-Pro. He had the best mark for average yards per punt in Lions history. Literally the best season we've ever had a punter for in Lions history. 49.1 yards per punt. It's an A, and it's not even hard to think about.
No, not even remotely. Like, Jay, I'm sorry, man. Like, you're my buddy. You'll always be my buddy, but just not good. It's a moment
I
where...
I did lead off with unpopular opinion.
Not even an unpopular opinion. It's your opinion. That's just it. It's not an unpopular opinion. There aren't people behind you to support it.
I got people.
It's a tough one. Okay, so obviously we're going to give special teams like a B grade because Jay's horrible grading just can't be counted in this situation.
So if I if I just stop it right there, I had accidentally, you know, also graded the return team, so I have to fix the formulas on here.
All right, the return team for me gets a B. They.
Oh, you're really gonna do that?
No, I don't care. Get rid of the formula. I don't care. I didn't do anything with it because there were so many different people back there doing so many different things. It's just impossible.
Okay. All right.
Jamal Agnew.
All right. So that gives us Eric gives an A minus. Justin paradoxically gives a D plus to the best unit on the team, and they get a B minus from me. It would have jumped up to a B plus had I included the return team on it. Yeah, so that's where we're at.
Justin, judge.
If everything you're doing is bad, I want you to know this.
It's not good over there, man. Like, it's, you're living up to Sergeant Salty right now. Like, if you ever wanted to earn your name, today's the day you're earning it. But it's just not good. Okay. Lastly, we have head coach, offensive coordinator, and defensive coordinator. I can make this pretty simple, pretty fast. Matt Patricia gets a, I don't even want to say that he gets a grade. He gets an incomplete. He couldn't finish the year. He dropped out halfway through. You want him to have a grade? It's an F. Horrible, horrible. I mean, Schwartz, we have seen a 0-16 season. A season of just no good, nothing good to discuss. I would still hire Rod Marinelli before I would hire Matt Patricia again. Because at least Rod Marinelli kind of knew what he was doing. Matt Patricia was just in over his head from day one, and he never wanted to admit it. And he took Bob Quinn down with him. Quinn, look, you hire Patricia. Patricia has a couple bad years, but you at least show improvement in other areas. Quinn could have held on to his job, but Quinn let Patricia sink him down with him. It's an F. It's an incomplete. It's whatever you want to give it. Russ, whatever's easier for you to quantify and calculate. Defensive coordinator, I'm giving a D+ because this D was terrible, and I don't even know who the defensive coordinator was this year. I really don't. That's how much I gave up on our defense. That defensive coordinator...
Adam Fox.
Probably. That's
Adam Fox from the Rangers?
Oh, my God. Justin, you're not allowed to talk for another minute. We're muting you for 1 minute. And then lastly, Daryl Bevel. I give Daryl Bevel as courteous of a grade as I could give him, because Daryl Bevel had to take on the interim head coach. He had to deal with a lot of different issues. It was so bad that he decided to take a week off and say he had COVID, because it was just getting so bad that he didn't want anything else to do with it. But on the flip side, Stafford had a productive season. He had to deal with a lot of different problems, not having his number one receiver. Hockenson had a blowout year. So I give him a right down the middle C+ for Daryl Bevel. Could have gone one way, could have gone the other. He kind of was right down the middle of the road. And sadly, his name is still in quiet conversation for potentially getting an interview as offensive coordinator. I don't think they keep him. I think they move on, Jay.
Yeah, Patricia, we should have saw it coming. He used to always preach about fundamentals. That I know why he was worried about fundamentals, because he didn't have any to begin with. So he gets enough. The defensive side of the ball gets enough. But I will side with you on Bevel. We had really good shades of Bevel last year when he came in, and then this year when he signed up to do a job he didn't sign up for to begin with, he was the interim head coach. So I will not be salty and knock him for that. So I'm going to give the offensive side of the ball a C.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Ian Rappaport, piggybacking off Tom Pelissero. I spoke too soon. Daryl Bevel, expected to be hired as offensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Daryl Bevel will not be back next year for the Detroit Lions. I spoke literally 10 seconds too soon on that statement. Daryl Bevel expected to go to Jacksonville with Urban Meyer. Sorry, Jay.
Oh, don't apologize. I've been blabbering with unfactual information. You're perfectly fine.
Who amongst us would have been better off if they just held on 10 more seconds?
Hey,
you should let me go off a little bit longer. We would have timed it perfectly.
All right,
Bevel perfect. And Urban. So, yeah, he gets a C for me on the offensive side of the ball, but now he's gone, so fuck him, he gets enough. Your turn, Russ.
I'm going to keep that great as a seed for now. I'm not going to repeat a lot of what you guys said, but it's an F for the head coach, an F for the defensive coordinator, and, hey, we're pulling two coaches from apparently our sister city in New Orleans down there. So next year I'm hoping this grade will be a whole lot better. B-plus for the offensive coordinator for, like, what Eric kind of said. He took on more roles. So it's about in line with what I gave the offense with a little bump because he took on more. Which does, of course, mean, on average, I gave the coaching staff a D, and you two gave them a D minus. Not good. Not good.
No, not good at all. It just, look, this whole thing has just reached a point where we needed to blow it up and start from the beginning, and they're doing that. But now it leaves just as many question marks of, are we in for multiple, you know, 5-11 seasons? Is this something that we're going to see, like what happened with Caldwell? We're going to see a out-of-nowhere surge of energy, and they look really good year one, but then we have to expect everything to level off as everybody gets used to it again. It's just a weird situation. All right, moving on. We are let's talk about the teams that are actually still playing. How about that? Sounds like a good time. Tampa Bay Buccaneers will take on the Green Bay Packers this week for the NFC position in the Super Bowl. As of right now, Green Bay is a 53.2% favorite to take it at home in Lambeau, where it's going to be like 1 degree when they kick off. Over-under is 51.5. The spread is Green Bay giving 3. Giving 3, that's a little too close for my liking. Ross, I'll let you go first here, Tampa Bay and Green Bay.
So this one's interesting, and as much as I nailed the conference final for the AFC, I got the NFC one completely wrong. So clearly I don't have the best beat on these teams. I will look back to the last time they played each other, which was back in October. Buccaneers won 38-10, and teams are 13-3 in the playoffs when they're coming off of a rematch where they won the first one by 20-plus points. Well, that's what we've got on our hands here, and I don't like saying it, but Tom Brady's going to be packed in the Super Bowl. I'm taking the Buccaneers 28-24.
28-24, I don't hate it. Jay, over to you.
In Rodgers, I trust. They competed, and he threw for over 300 yards against one of the best defenses in the league, which was the Rams. I will take Rodgers and Adams over Tom Brady and any player on that roster. I feel like they're a superior team. Give me the pack. They're just a better team to win. In terms of the score, I didn't have that ready, so that shows me where I'm at, but it's the 51.
51.5, yeah.
28-17, Green Bay. I think they're gonna score often and early, and they're going to stifle Tom. And then we get to talk about Brady and Belichick all over again, because you know that's going to come up when Tom loses in Tampa.
Okay. I don't hate it. Look, it's the Battle of the Bays, and in this case, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to take it. I like this Green Bay offense. I like Rodgers. I think Davante Adams is playing great. There's no one else to talk about. It's just those two for that team, but somehow they're in the NFC championship. On the other side, Tampa Bay is playing great football. Brady is 172 years old. Literally just had to trade in his leather helmet that he was wearing in the early part of his career. And he's going to go to the Super Bowl again. I don't think he's going to collect another ring, but I think he's going to get to that Super Bowl. And he's finally definitively proven in the Belichick-Brady debate, it was Belichick that needed Brady. It 100% was. 28-24, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
That's a good score. I like that score.
Yeah. It's just a little over that 3-point spot, proving you didn't need to give him any points at all. As we flip to the other side, we have, in my opinion, probably the most exciting game I could piece together. Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs. Real quick before we get to this one, I don't know if this was just a stupid comment. I don't know if this was just, well, it was Colin Coward, so it was stupid to begin with. Colin Coward made, I don't know if either of you guys heard this, Colin Coward made the comment that they should postpone the AFC Championship game so Mahomes has time to get healthy. I'm not going to even pick one of you. Go.
No.
There, Grandpa. Well, sit down, please. No. What? It's a sport. What? No.
I stopped tweeting at him because he's solely the person that pisses me off the most on Twitter. Of all of Twitter, this guy's a fucking grade A asshole. In the history of sports, everyone's been hurt and the game has still gone on. You can't just cherry pick, oh, but we need Mahomes. We need him. We gotta change every rule. No, he probably is going to play. He probably shouldn't play. And no one gives two shits what Colin Cowherd has to say. Stupid.
I really wish I hadn't Colin Cowherd that.
Well, I have to ask, was that a first time hearing it for either of you?
Yes.
It was.
Oh, I heard that this morning.
You heard that this morning. I saw it either yesterday or this morning. No, I think it's ridiculous. Like, that's the whole point of this. Like, the playoffs are a single game. You don't get to be like, wait, can we time this out? Wait a week. Like, let's just push everything back. Let's just give – Mahomes has a hangnail, and it's not working for him. Like, that's not how this works. Like, you get hurt. It happens. It's unfortunate. But I go back to, for a while, they talked about it. Should the Golden State-Cleveland series have been timed out because Kevin Love, like, broke his arm or whatever? No, you don't get to restart. You don't get to wait till everybody's at full health. That doesn't make any sense. That's not how sports works. Look, is it a huge dis? I mean, look, Chad Henne's a U of M quarterback. Love Chad Henne. Ross, I would go as far as saying he might be probably the greatest U of M quarterback ever. It's a stretch, but it's not that far off to say. He holds almost every record. He was a phenomenal quarterback. Hasn't made a lot of success in the NFL, you know, played with the Dolphins, played with Jacksonville, really kind of took his spot, but was more of a career backup. So is it a huge disadvantage? Absolutely, especially with how Josh Allen and Diggs are playing. But at the end of the day, that's the card you were dealt. You got to go out there and do it. A football team is 11 guys. It's not one guy, albeit that one guy is probably the best at his position. So it's tough. Kansas City still favored 58.3%. Over under is 54. Again, spread 3 points. They think this is going to be close. I don't. I personally think we're going to see Buffalo show that they are the electric offense we kind of think they are. I personally think that we are going to see 31-17 Buffalo Bills.
Ooh, clap it up for Eric one time.
I like this Diggs-Allen combination. I really do. I have questions on defense, but I also think Mahomes is – even if Mahomes plays, he's not going to be 100%. He's going to be a little weary. They are going to probably play a little more conservative because if they win this one, they still got one more, and they don't need him getting banged up before the Super Bowl. So a little weary. And also, I don't know about you guys. This might just be me. I'm not really sold on Kansas City's run game, if there even is one. I feel like they have kind of fallen away into being a very successful Detroit Lions, where they immediately have to go to the pass attack as fast as they can to just get far enough ahead that they can, you know, mediocrely run the ball. So that's just my opinion. So, yeah, 31-17, Jay.
I'm drinking, again, same cup. Bills are going to win 38-35. Mahomes is elite. Kelsey is elite. Hill is elite. That Bills defense isn't elite, but they're going to be good enough. It is going to be a dogfight to the point where there's a lot of scoring, but I'm going with the underdog. I want the Bills to win this. So give me the Bills 38-35.
Love it.
Oh, no. We're all doing it.
Yes.
Go back again to their last playing game. Chiefs won 26-17. However, it was literally Josh Allen's worst statistical game of the season. So it's a 9-point game if Josh Allen plays his worst game. If he plays an average game for him, is that enough to win? Well, it just might be for a Kansas City team who, don't look now, hasn't scored more than 22 points in their last three games. That is against the Browns, the Chargers, and the Falcons. Not exactly stellar defenses. You'd expect Mahomes played in two of those games, but you'd expect them to put up at least 22 points. Yeah, Mahomes is expected to play, but something ain't right. So Super Bowl is the Dwight Schrute special. Bills, Bucks, Battlestar Galactica. Let's do it.
Love it.
Yes.
All right. Obviously, great games to watch, and we will. What's great is when we get a little reprieve from football, we can actually, you know, we can analyze these games, and hey, that just means we're closer to our favorite part of the year, Super Bowl prop bets, guys. We seem to enjoy those. We seem to have fun with those. Moving on, last segment, we want to cover the other two sports that we just seem to kind of be leaving out. Hockey's back, Red Wings. We have the Pistons going. We'll lead off with the Pistons, and I just want to say two things. One, the Pistons are dead last in the East. They are 3-11. It's not fun to watch. Blake, yeah, yes, if you're looking for the teardown, and let's see what they can do with it. Blake Griffin just doesn't seem to understand that he's a power forward and needs to go in the paint to play. And who the hell would have thought that Jeremy Grant would be the undisputed scorer of this team, Russ? Jeremy Grant averaging 25.5 points a game. Derrick Rose behind him with 15.5. Blake obviously rounding it out, 13.5 points a game. Overall, this is exactly what we thought it was going to be. A very, very bad, very mixed together Pistons team that really is kind of a experiment for Troy Weaver. He's seeing what ingredients work with what, and we'll probably see the same thing happen again next year, trading out what didn't work for other pieces. And this is legitimately just trying to figure out the puzzle one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think to your first question, the only person that saw Jeremy Grant doing this coming was Troy Weaver, mm-hmm. who handed him that truck full of money to go and do exactly this. And that was it was shades of the romanticism we give to Joe Dumars piecing together that team, pulling guys off the scrap heap. Now, granted, Dumars didn't have to pay a premium to bring him in, so
no.
Weaver's halfway there to figuring out that magic, but he got the important part right, and the guy looks like an all-star. He's top 10 or top 15 in almost every major statistical category. He's safely a top 20 player in the NBA right now, which they haven't had one of those in a while in Detroit, not since Blake got, you know, started his steep decline. And to Weaver's credit, he's looked really good. Stewart's coming along well, establishing himself already as one of the better offensive rebounders in the game. There's some pieces. And to your point, yeah, they're figuring out what matches with what, and we've already got some hits, it looks like, which is super encouraging. Now they're bad. They dropped two to Atlanta, who is really the barometer of, hey, have you improved? Turns out no. So there's going to be another high pick, another high piece to put in there, and I'm more confident that Troy Weaver is going to nail that pick than I was a couple weeks ago even. This is good. The team's bad. That's okay. The individual parts are good, and it's shaping up for a better future. And Wayne Ellington's shooting the lights out because pick him off his crazy scrap heap. Like, I don't – Troy Weaver's living up to the length. I'll leave that as my parting thought. He's doing what we thought he could.
Troy Weaver is the mad scientist right now. He legitimately is just – like I said, at the end of this year, you're going to see it. That's the reason a lot of these guys are for – very little money or for weird deals is because at the end of it, he feels no remorse having to get rid of the pieces that didn't work, Jay, and throwing in other pieces that might complement where he felt we were lacking.
Yeah, and part of the thing, now that Russ and I figured out a way to backdoor Sinclair Group and actually watch our Detroit Pistons, because we do have that now. We have that feature. You know, but reading up on the team, 3-11, and the headlines I see is Ellington from 3, Grant is always leading the team in scoring, and our only asset that we needed to trade later on in the year is not performing yet with Griffin.
Yeah.
So it is those guys that we just got to have made an impact, but we need to get Griffin up and going so we can get rid of them. Losing Killing and Hayes for another 8 weeks now, that sucks.
Yeah, that's not good.
Not happy about that. And then I see Obi Toppin not even being used for the Knicks. So this is just great from this draft. But as Russ is saying, they're a fun, bad team. We've labeled them as this fun, bad team. We're having fun because they're bad, and we're going to get a high pick again next year.
You sound like Peter Griffin because it's fun. We're having fun. That's literally it. No, what I like about this.
I'm willing it.
What I like about this is legitimately this is a like I'm going to use the word fun. This is a fun time. Because we have three GMs that are doing it how, like, we haven't seen what Holmes has done yet, but we're assuming that are going to do it the way they want to. And it really is it's a fun time to just see where they're going to go with it and how they're going to do. It's very enjoyable. Eiserman's, and we're going to touch on that here in a minute. Eiserman's made some moves and signed one particular person who's decided that he wants to be the best hockey player on the team and rival Dylan Larkin. Weaver's making all these moves. I can't wait to see what Holmes does. It should be fun. Before we get to the Detroit Red Wings, because I know you guys got a lot to say on this one, I do want to ask, over the last week, James Harden traded to the Nets for a million different things. We won't get into it all. But weird way to think about it. Do the Nets automatically become the number one contender in the East? Whoever wants to touch on it.
I want nothing to do with James Harden and his drama and Kyrie Irving and his drama. And probably yes, but it's full of fucking divas, which is par for the course.
Can the answer be yes as soon as I see Kyrie Irving physically on the court again?
It's fair. But see, that's the other reason I say it is because talent-wise, there shouldn't be any dispute that they are. But like Jay pointed out, there's so much drama that I wonder even if they got into the playoffs and got as far as the finals, which you would assume is going to be against the Lakers. I mean, that's not an unfair assumption. I just wonder how much they could handle that situation. Kyrie has obviously won one, but he was with LeBron when he did it. KD and Harden got to a finals together with Oklahoma City, couldn't get it done. So it's that thing of, I just wonder with all the drama and the off-court antics and problems, I wonder if we could potentially just see a team completely explode on the biggest stage. And I kind of want to see it, to be honest. I don't want the Lakers to win another title. I really don't. I would love nothing more than to see the Lakers fall apart. But LeBron's not going to let anybody get out of line. I don't know who's the person on the other side that when things start going a little off, steps up in the locker room and tells everybody to be quiet, because there are just three very big, very outspoken personalities on that team, and I wonder how much they really mesh together. So it's curious, but it's such a weird situation. It's a great year for you to pick up basketball, Jay.
Hey, I'm excited because it's just like, I hate the drama, but then you love the drama. It's like, you love, I hate you, drama, but I want to watch more.
It's fair. Moving on to the Detroit Red Wings, a currently, if I'm not mistaken, 2-2 hockey team. Very. Look, this is the way this is going to go. Grice is going to stop a lot of shots. Bernier is going to win games. That's what I'm getting out of this, because 2-0 Bernier. I would like to make a petition, just for right now until things change. I don't want to call them the Detroit Red Wings anymore. I think they need to be called the Bobby Ryans.
We can
change that name as we see fit. It's like a fantasy hockey team. This is the Bobby Ryans right now. 4 goals. In 3 games played. He's looking good to start the year. Now, again, how many times have we seen that from someone? They get off to a hot start, can't sustain it. Hopefully he can. Bobby Ryan's been a great hockey player in this league over the years, Jay. But it's fun to see. Larkin, also 4 points, 2 goals, 2 assists. Your thoughts after a week or so of him carrying that captain position?
I think it's going fine. I mean, I don't think he's changed his game to any degree over last year. Like, he's still Larkin. Like, he's just wearing a letter on his shirt, or on his sweater, rather. So I'm fine with that. The Bobby Ryan thing, I love it. He scores his first goal. He chased down that puck like he just got his first goal in, like, mini-mites, you know, at a half rink in some local podunk town. Like, he was so ecstatic to get that puck. So I loved that. The Grice thing you brought up, I think that's my favorite stat right now. I actually had another favorite stat after this stat. Grice is 2-2, 0.930, but he's got 2.59 goals against. He better get comfy with that last part of his stat. He might be an average win. He might have more losses than wins. You know, his save percentage might not be bad. If he can keep it over 9, great. But that goals against, it's like one of the worst goals against for like the top like 15 goalies, which he's involved in that. He's got one of the worst ones. In terms of goals against average. The only part that I really love about the Wings, real quickly, Glenn Denning has a 65% face-off success rate, which is 10th best in the league. He is the 10th best artist on the face-off drop. It's beautiful. Glennie does these things that no one knows but me, because I watch it, 10th best in the league in the face-off percentages right now. It's glorious.
Jay, I'd like to correct one stat. Grice is not 2-2 right now. Grice is 0-2.
Yeah, the team is 2-2.
Bernier won the 2 games. Grice has only played 2 games so far this year. So get your facts straight before you come into this.
Thank you.
This ring. Russ, I want your impressions on Larkin, but I just want your impressions. Not a surprise, kind of a surprise, or kind of a really clear cut sign of the talent of this team that our first line are the top or three of the top four in points right now.
Oh, it makes sense. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, that's in line with what was before, and they were so bereft of talent deeper in the lineup that all of the work Yzerman did was just kind of to get the team back to normal, yeah. to acceptable depth. And really, they're not even there because they haven't figured out the second center position at all yet. Because if I'm going to talk faceoff percentages, as good as Glendening has been, Fabry's been worse, the opposite magnitude, and then a little bit worse than that. I think he went like 2 of 12 in one game. It's just absolutely abysmal. But I expect the top of the lineup guys are going to be what they are, and we're probably going to see them broken up a little bit more to get some other lines going like we did in the most recent game. Hopefully it works. I'd like to see one of them pair with Zadina and just have him really take off because he's already started to take off, and it's been a lot of fun. And please, for the love of God, build up. Zadina is the only one doing this right now, but he sets up behind the net and has set up Bobby Ryan for two different goals. Larkin did it by accident once, putting it off in a Carolina player's skate. Set up behind the net. Do it more. Move your power play there. Leave. It's different. It changes the goalie's focus. There's a ton of research on this now that shows how dangerous it can be. It's that and Royal Road passes. Do more of them. You see it works. I don't know. I guess my takeaway is, hey, I'm happy with how Zadina is playing. But this is a team, like you guys said, goalies are playing well. 935 save percentage at even strength, 10th best in the league. 6% shooting percentage from the offense. So as good as the goalies have been, the shooters have been bad the opposite way. They're losing the shot share. They're losing the expected goals for. It's still a bad team, even though it's 2-2. But, hey, it's a lot easier to watch them now, right?
Much. Jay, you had something to say.
Zadina's apples is the first thing that's on my list here because those, like, I don't know if it's even underrated. It just needs to be utilized more because he passes the puck like a goddamn wizard. And you saw it was evident the other night when he got two of them. Like, I need that, and I need Bertuzzi scrappy against Chicago. We're going to win a couple games.
I love Bertuzzi scrappy. The guy is legitimately my favorite player on this team. It is so much fun to watch this guy play. And see, I like that from Zadina. Zadina, they're expecting him to develop. They want to see him do a lot on this thing. But Zadina has figured out a role that he can kind of hold on to help become instrumental in this team as he develops a little more. He has, like you said, 2 assists on the year setting him up. He has figured out something that he can do to help contribute, and it gets him ice time. He's not just out there skating around trying, you know, different stuff. He's out there contributing to this team, and I like it. I really do. I sort of hinted at this towards the Pistons. I definitely want to discuss it with the Red Wings. We're a week in. It's only 4 games. We can't really, get too far ahead of ourselves, 2-2. But I want to ask you both impressions of the team right now and kind of give me a quick crystal ball look into the future. What are we gonna see at the end of the year for this Red Wings team? I'll let Russ go.
So impressions of the team is unfinished, but it's much better, right? I mentioned losing the shot share and losing the expected goals for battles. They're bottom 5 in shot share differential there, and they're bottom 10 in expected goals for differential, which is typically a better indicator of how your record's going to end up than your win-loss record after 4 games. So I'll use that to project. It maybe doesn't put them in last place, but it's still a bottom 5 team, right? They're still going to not be very good, but they're going to win some games they shouldn't. It's not going to be something where you have to rely on sweeping the Canadiens to get, almost half of your wins for a season. They're going to be scrappy. They're going to be more competitive. They're not going to lose as many games by as many goals. They had some, I forget the stat, but some ridiculous amount of games they lost by 5 goals or more. Partially because you don't have a Jimmy Howard to absolutely blow up. You have a solid tandem. They are performing like one of the better tandems in the league, given the workload they've been given. So that will keep it competitive, if not successful. I'm glad we got that work around it. F you, Sinclair.
I've got kind of the same outlook. It's a battle of the bottom, and especially within our own division, we're going to face Chicago, which is going to be another bottom 5 team in the league as well when it's all said and done. I think the way when you're watching a game that you could pick up if they even have a remote chance at winning, because we know we're going to get out of Grice. We know Stetcher is going to get tossed from one end to another just by looking at him. You're going to get a sense of if they are actually sustaining pressure offensively. Too many times they lose that puck so fucking quickly offensively, it's gone. You don't have a chance. You can't score if you're not down by the net. When they get the sustained pressure, there's a good chance they might win that game, but they're not going to win a lot of them. So it's a battle of the bottom for this team, and I'm going to watch all of it.
That's fair. I like it. Look, I know very little about hockey, but I can tell you by listening to these two and, you know, following the game as best I can, I agree with what you guys said. This is going to be a team that's going to come up with some wins, like you see almost every year. They managed to win one or two that they never should have, and it gives everybody resilient hope until the following game. But this is a bottom team. Hopefully this is a team that we can see the improvement and see that it's not as far out as we think it is. But I could be wrong. But lastly, we're four games in, and I've already completely given up on Stahl altogether. Just given up on him.
Oh, that's okay.
He's trash.
Yeah, I knew you guys would agree with me on that one. Just don't see it. Don't get it. But, hey, it's trial and error. You're not everyone's going to work out perfectly the way you thought he was. And, look, there's no reason to – I mean, I'm giving up on him jokingly. No, I'm not joking. I give up on him.
I'm not joking.
But that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Another full week. Congratulations to Dan Campbell and, is it Brad Holmes or Brian Holmes?
Brad.
I know, I'm just messing Brad Holmes.
Jesus.
I heard someone today say Brian and I'm like, I don't think that's right. Congratulations to Dan Campbell, new head coach, Brian Holmes, the, new GM of the Detroit Lions. Also my thanks to Sergeant, you were super salty today. Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus. Just, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you should really learn to like kicking things.
You know what? No, I don't want to. I don't want to. You know what? I'm going to be as salty as Bertuzzi against Chicago because hell have no fury like an arbitrated Bertuzzi, and he's coming in hot against Tri-Town.
Fair enough. And as always, the stat man, Russ Ivanek. You're right, Russ. Your stats did make me sad today, but that's okay. Sometimes they're not as upbeat as you think they're going to be, but you always make us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
And I left out maybe the most pessimistic one because we're having fun, and the wonder years are coming. For now, I'll just have to have fun with you guys. And this was another week of it.
Fair enough. And as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.